debate, interviews and bright ideas. Kevin MacLeod, Fiona Shaw, leading artists, thinkers and public figures, and an audience at the Sage Gateshead. Free Thinking, starting with the author Dame Jacqueline Wilson, Friday night at 9 on BBC Radio 3. And go online to bbc.co.uk/radio3 for a lot more to get your head around.
Back to the Saturday afternoon. It's just gone 3 o'clock. Time now for World Roots. This week, Lucy Duran explores the music of Afghanistan.
Afghan rubab, an instrument as beautiful looking as it sounds, played there in the World Roots studio by Ahmad Wahid Delahong with Wahid Wahidi on tabla. That was a folk song from Herat in the northwest of Afghanistan, and there'll be more music from Ahmad Wahid Delahong and his rubab later on in the programme. Welcome to World Roots, and stay tuned for exciting news of how you can get your hands on tickets for the special World Roots 10th anniversary concert. Plus, I'll be announcing the new protégé of the 2011 World Roots Academy. But first, we stay in Afghanistan, and I'm joined by music writer and broadcaster Simon Broughton, who's the man behind the recently released Rough Guide to the Music of Afghanistan CD. It's a broad mix of music from across a country that has a violent and traumatic history, but somehow its music continues to play an important role in people's lives. There's a variety of ethnicities and styles represented on the CD, but we'll start with one of the most respected female Afghan singers, Farida Mahwash, singing a Sufi song. If my eyes meet those of the Lord, all my sins will be forgiven. Alas, intolerance has closed the tavern where one can find refuge.
گر کنم صاحب من بر تو نگاهی گاهی گر کنم صاحب من بر تو نگاهی گاهی افکن می شود از بنده
The great female voice of Afghanistan, Mahwash, and that song was Gar Konad Saheb Iman, which translates as If My Eyes Meet the Ones of the Lord. That's one of the tracks on the Rough Guide to the Music of Afghanistan, put together by Simon Broughton. And it's clearly a devotional song, Simon.
Yes, it is. And it comes really from Afghanistan's fantastically rich Sufi tradition. And Sufi music is, of course, when music is used as a form of worship, really. Of course, Afghanistan's a country where a lot of conflict has come out of the idea of religion and music. There have been decades of fighting over it. So while the music seems very calm and sublime and uplifting, it's led to a lot of conflict.
Well, why don't you tell us about when music was in its most sort of contentious moment in Afghanistan?
Well, the Taliban adopted the most severe form of repression of music, and the most severe repression of music there's ever been, to our knowledge.
What, anywhere in the world?
Anywhere in the world, at any time. So what it meant was that musical instruments were destroyed, all forms of popular music on the radio. I mean, the radio was banned, the television was banned, all public music making was banned. So it was an incredibly vigorous persecution of music, on the grounds that it was, you know, un-Islamic and a distraction from God. Practically what that meant is that all musicians basically had to get out or shut up. Now, of course, the Taliban were overthrown in 2001, November 2001, and since then, musical life has returned to Afghanistan. Now, as we know from the news every day, there is a continuing battle going on with the Taliban. This is mainly focused in the South Helmand province, where all the deaths are all too often happening. But other parts of the country, I mean, Kabul, Herat, Mazar-e-Sharif, these are the three cities, Kabul in the east, Herat in the west, close to Iran, Mazar in the north, close to the Central Asian countries, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, to the north of Afghanistan. These are cities that do have, you know, a functioning musical life. I mean, you know, the conditions aren't great, but there is musical life in all these places.
So, Simon, let's hear something from the album that's really, really local folk music.
Yes, a track I'd like to play is by a musician called Safdar Tawakkuli, and he comes from one of the other ethnic groups within Afghanistan called the Hazara. The Hazara are an ethnic group in the middle of Afghanistan, in the area of the Bamiyan Buddhas, the huge Buddha stone-carved Buddha statues that were blown up by the Taliban in 2001. And the Hazara inhabit that area, and they were very much repressed by the Taliban. They weren't friends at all. And this is a lovely song by a musician, Hazara musician, who lives and works in Kabul. And it's a sort of comic love song, but he plays, Safdar Tawakkuli plays a dambura, which is a plucked instrument, and then his colleague is playing a gijak, which is a sort of bowed instrument, actually made out of an old metal tin can with strings on it and percussion. And it's just a really nice, slightly nasal, rural sound, but really music of the Afghan people.
She see your palta palta, pekai she get you kill a mobile for pekai she get you kill a mobile for Sadiki yar kalaremun shosh nazuna khayli bisyarish mara kush nazuna khayli bisyarish mara kush khodawanda mara kalami sakhti gayi chapat mizat gayi qadimush gayi chapat mizat gayi qadim gayi chapat mizat gayi qadim nazu nakhrara ku bas ku چادر از گردی روی خوب پس کو دیدا چادر از گردی روی خوب پس کو دیدا روی پر کجو پیجی قل سیارا بله روی سفید رنگ از کو دیدا بله روی سفید رنگ از کو دیدا بله روی سفید رنگ از کو دیدا
A comic love song by the musician Safdar Tawakkuli from the centre of Afghanistan, a Hazara musician who sings and plays the dambura, a plucked lute. And it's obviously a live recording and people are clearly enjoying it.
Well, actually, that was one of the first concerts after the fall of the Taliban. So, and I was there for it. I've been to Afghanistan on three different occasions, once to make a film for BBC about the return of music after the Taliban, which was extraordinary, just to see a country or a place at this moment when music returns. And you think, well, what, you know, how do you notice that? It was tangible, frankly. People were just getting out their cassette recorders and ghetto blasters and buffing them up and polishing them like, you know, valued objects brought out of hiding. Cassettes were being brought on sale, unpacked, boxes and boxes and sacks of cassettes being bussed in from Pakistan.
Because the thing is, Simon, Afghanistan was always an extremely musical country, a country with a fantastically rich variety of musical styles reflecting all those different ethnicities.
Exactly. There's a variety of musical styles because of many ethnicities. The biggest sort of population is Pashto-speaking. Then there's Persian-speaking Dari. Dari is the Persian language. And then there are Uzbeks and Tajiks, Hazaras. And then in Badakhshan in the northeast, other ethnic groups. So it's a really rich mix. And of course, there are many musical styles.
Nevertheless, at least half the artists on your compilation, The Rough Guide to the Music of Afghanistan, don't actually live in Afghanistan anymore.
No, the truth is that the whole Afghan music scene is in a very big part an exile scene. So the track I think we're going to finish with is by the biggest living star of Afghan music, who sadly is not in Afghanistan at all. He lives in the US. He's called Farhad Darya. I saw tapes of him, videotapes of him when he was in Afghanistan in the 1980s. He was a young sort of pop idol at that time. He's now, you know, a more veteran Afghan musician in exile. But he went back and did a huge concert in Kabul in a football stadium, the same place as the Taliban executed women and so on. There were thousands of people there, and it was like a sort of exorcism of the former regime. So the song we're going to play is called Salam Alek, which is a sort of greeting piece. And it's a collaboration with a German musician called Peter Maffay, a rock musician. And I just like it because it's so surprising in a way. It's not what you'd expect to hear from The Rough Guide to the Music of Afghanistan. It's a sort of 80s style rock song, Salam Alek Kabul, Salam Alek Berlin. And you think, OK, yeah, these are you know, rock guys greeting the big cities of the world. And then as they list the cities and you hear Mogadishu, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, you realise, actually, no, it's not just, you know, big cities of the world. They're all places that have had some awful warfare. True of Kabul, true of Berlin, true of London, true of New York. All these cities have had terrible events that have killed people. And so I feel this song, which is essentially just a list of geographical places, actually has a very powerful message, and one that has something that we need to bear in mind given what's going on today. Salam Alek, Dushanbe,
Jerusalem, Islamabad.
Farhad Darya, a superstar from Afghanistan, with wishes of peace to the cities of the world. Salam Alek. And that's taken from the new Rough Guide to the Music of Afghanistan, compiled by my guest Simon Broughton. Many thanks to him for joining us. You're listening to World Roots with me, Lucy Duran, on BBC Radio 3. And for information on all the music played in the programme today, do visit the World Roots pages of the Radio 3 website. Well, it seems like just yesterday that Radio 3 launched World Roots, but this year the programme actually turns 10 years old. And to celebrate, we're throwing a musical party. The artists taking part are making the journey from four different continents to join in the celebrations, and they include the Peruvian Andean singer-songwriter Manuelcha Prado, the Turkish gypsy clarinet virtuoso Selim Sesler with members of his band, young Mongolian throat singers Huzuk Tun and British-based Senegalese kora player Sekou Keita. Plus a special guest appearance from the world music superstar Youssou N'Dour. It all takes place on Friday, the 26th of November, starting at 7:30 in the BBC's famous Maida Vale Studios in West London. We have a limited number of pairs of tickets available to World Roots listeners. So if you'd like to attend the World Roots 10th anniversary concert, please call 0370 901 1127 or see the Radio 3 website for details. That number again is 0370 901 1127. It should be quite a night, and you have until midnight on the 10th of November to apply for tickets. More exciting news to come this afternoon with the announcement of the latest musician to join the World Roots Academy. All that after we hear more music from Afghanistan. We now return to the musician that we heard at the beginning of the programme. He comes from the northwest of Afghanistan, from the city of Herat, which is held by many to be the centre of art and culture in the country. Ahmed Wahid Delahong is a young player of the rubab, the 22-string lute that's often called the soul of Afghanistan. And in a special session for World Roots, he starts off with an instrumental version of a local folk song. So this is Ahmed Wahid Delahong on rubab with Wahid Wahidi on tabla. That is the very special sound of music from Afghanistan. The musicians are Ahmad Wahid Delohang, who plays the rubab, the 22-string lute that's special to Afghanistan. And accompanying him on the tabla is Wahid Wahidi. And also with us is Saljuki Nasruddin, who is the author of several books on the arts of Herat, which is where these two musicians are from, a city in northwest Afghanistan, which obviously is a very special place for music. Yeah. Saljuki, yeah. Why is that?
Herat is the center of art and culture, and this is important, that music, most of the people, they love music, and most of these people, they play music in their home. And they like music, and they are performing music in their parties, in their weddings, in their picnics. And this is the hobbies of Herati people.
And the piece that we just heard is, in fact, an instrumental version of a local folk song. Ahmad Wahid.
Ida Robete, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
In the name of God.
This
song was belong to the Karuch district, which is a palace in Herat city. And there is a grave of Pir-e Karuch, Islamic leader of Karuch. And this song which I played, it has belonged to that grave. Because people are going there to pray there, I played that because of that.
Tell me about this instrument, the rubab. What does the word actually mean?
Yeah, it belongs to a spirit.
A spirit.
It's very good for your mind and your nervous. If you have psychological problem, if you listen that, you'd be treated very well.
Ah, it will heal you.
Heal you, yeah.
So the rubab will heal.
Heal, yes, yeah.
Yes, it has a really haunting and soothing sound. Ahmad, I see that you're playing with a plectrum and that the plectrum is in the shape of a heart.
Yes, because if you play that, everybody like it to go to the heart of everybody.
So the heart plays the
heart
spirit.
Heart plays the spirit.
It's as beautiful to look at the rubab as it is to listen to. It's all inlaid with mother of pearl, and you have depictions of flowers and birds, and it's really, really beautifully crafted. Can we hear another piece of music then from Herat?
The next one is the nightingale is complaining from the flower.
The nightingale is complaining about the flower.
Flower, yes.
Why does the nightingale complain about the flower?
It was disturbing the nightingale because there was some needle near the
thorn.
A thorn, yeah.
Oh, so there was a thorn.
Yeah, a thorn, yeah.
Well, we're going to now hear an instrumental version of a folk song from Herat in northwest Afghanistan, played on the rubab by Ahmad Wahid Delohang and accompanied on tabla by Wahid Wahidi. And it has the most gorgeous title, The Nightingale Has Complained That the Flower Has Thorns.
Thank you.
folk music from the northwest of Afghanistan here in the World Roots studio by Ahmad Wahid Delohang on rubab, this wonderful instrument which is unique to Afghanistan and has 22 strings, accompanied on the tabla by Wahid Wahidi. And that was a song in honour of the nightingale, except the nightingale was having a bad time because the flower had lots of thorns. So, Ahmad, you're a very young musician, and I know that you've already spent part of your life in exile, but you're now living back in Herat.
It was a struggle in our country. Situation was very bad, and we emigrated to Iran. I emigrated to Iran, I was with my family. I could learn the rubab for 1 year from my father.
Because you have rubab in your family for several generations?
Yes. I came from a musician family, and my father was a singer and harmonium player. And also my grandfather was the rubab player. He was the most famous rubab player. And also my uncle was playing the rubab. And also my grandfather from my mother, also he was a singer and a master singer in Afghanistan. And I came from a musician family.
And so now you're back in Herat. Are you able to play music in Herat?
Yes, I came back to Herat. We are happy in Herat and we are performing music for the people and people are enjoying music and also are performing music to the Herati parties and wedding.
And so, Ahmed, so far you've played versions of folk song from Herat, but I know that you also have a kind of a classical music.
I'm following the old master musician from Afghanistan and I'm following them.
So you're going to play some classical music that's inspired by a composition of your father in Rag Shiwa Ranjani. And starting with Chaptal, which is a 10-beat rhythm, and then going on to Tintal, a 16-beat rhythm. And what is special about Rag Shiwa Ranjani?
This rag is played when you have sadness.
There's a bit of a sad theme going on. There must be a lot of heartache in Afghanistan. And music, of course, has suffered terribly. It suffered terribly under the Taliban.
We try to make the people to forget this sadness. We don't perform sad rocks all the time. When we perform during the wedding and with my father in the party, we try to have a happy performance.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us here in the World Roots studio. And now we'll hear Ahmad Wahid Delohang on rubab and Wahid Wahidi on tabla playing Rag Shiwa Ranjani, the special classical music of Afghanistan.
Thank you.
Ahmed Wahid Delahong on rubab and Wahid Wahidi on tabla with the classical music of Afghanistan, and they played Rag Shiva Ranjani. That session was recorded earlier this month, specially for World Roots. Well, we end today with exciting news of the next focus in the World Roots Academy. The Academy was a completely new Radio 3 initiative this year, and it aims to support talented young world music artists living in the UK by bringing them together with an internationally renowned artist from the same musical tradition. Now, listeners to World Roots will have heard the outstanding oud playing of London-based Iraqi musician Khayyam Alami, who was our first protégé and whose mentor was the celebrated Iraqi singer-songwriter Ilham Al-Madfai. It's been an incredible year of discovery, of learning about the wealth of folk and classical music of Iraq, and also witnessing the extraordinary spirit of Iraqi musicians living in exile who keep these traditions alive. And it was an emotional journey as well, taking Khayyam back to Syria where he was born, recording musicians around Damascus, finding out about how the music industry works in Lebanon, Syria and Jordan, where we recorded a special session with Ilham Al-Madfai in a vineyard on the edge of the desert. World Roots Academy 2010 culminated in a late night prom featuring Khayyam Alami and Ilham Al-Madfai. So as we look towards 2011, we turn to next year's Academy. And I'm delighted to announce that this time we focus on the music of South India. And the new World Roots Academy protégé is the exceptional young veena player Hari Vrindavan Sivanesan. Hari joins me in the studio now, and let's start by hearing him play Ragam Sumanesha Ranjani. That is the beautiful and very special sound of the veena, the instrument from South India, played right here in the studio by Hari Sivanesan, and that was Ragam Sumanesha Ranjani. And I'm very happy, Hari, to welcome you to the World Roots Academy as our new protégé. Many congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm also happy that you play the veena, this fantastic instrument, because it's great to focus on an instrument that's not that well known outside South India.
I think it gives the South Indian music a bit of the exposure that it needs at the moment.
Yes, because it's true to say, isn't it, that South Indian music is very rich. It's got a fantastic
incredibly,
history,
yeah.
And there are so many different traditions, but somehow it's just not as well known as North Indian music. Why is that, do you think?
I think in many cases, the first Indian artists to come out of India were from the North. So they brought Hindustani music with them. And there were very few South Indian artists who took that step out to really explore the West. And so because of that, instruments like the sitar and the tabla became very well known. And once they became well known, it was very difficult for, therefore, the Carnatic, the South Indian whole section to come out and be recognised thereafter. So I'm glad it's a good year. It's a good year for us.
How different are they, the North and South Indian traditions?
The base is the same, to be honest. There was one school of music in India, and then at one point, invaders from the North came in. They then amalgamated the music with what was then there, and hence two systems became apparent, one for the North, Hindustani, and one for the South, Carnatic. How different are they? They in a way, they're two different worlds, but, you know, music is just one language. So in that sense, very similar.
Well, would it be fair to say then, from your description, the invasion, I presume you're talking about the Mughal invasion, and that brought in some Persian elements and influences. So could we say then that South Indian music is closer to how Indian music would have sounded before the Mughal invasion? Would you dare say?
I don't know if everyone would agree, and it's a pretty bold statement to make, to be honest. But from what I understand, from my understanding, is that the South is a little closer to what there was, yes.
And tell us about the veena.
The veena, I like to call the mother of the sitar. It evolved from what was there in India, then called the yal. It belongs to the lute family, you could say. But the veena's been there in mythology for thousands of years, basically.
I've seen depictions of Sarasvati, the deity of arts and knowledge, holding the veena, playing the veena.
Yep. One of the goddesses is popularly pictured playing the veena. There have been stories of devotees who have, through their penance, recreated the veena using their body parts in order to play it to attain devotion, to attain...
So hair for strings kind
No,
of
intestines
thing.
For strings, oh, actually, yeah. and a spinal column as the frets. So it's been around for a long time. There's seven strings, four used for playing main melody and three used for drone and also used for rhythm. It's popularly made out of one piece of wood, and in the olden days there'd be another gourd made out of dried pumpkin or hollowed pumpkin, but nowadays we use fiberglass. It's actually said that within the veena lies numerous deities, or they've basically decided to take residence within the veena. And
we are talking about the Hindu religion.
Hindu religion. In the scripture, I believe it's said that the sounds or the strains of the veena is most similar to the voice. And also, it's the most adept out of all instruments in raising your kundalini shakti, which is the energy lying dormant at the base of the chakra. So basically, they'd argue in the scriptures that it elevates you spiritually without you knowing.
Now, Harry, we're also very thrilled to announce that your mentor in the World Roots Academy is one of South India's finest classical singers.
Yes, she
and
is,
her name is Aruna Sairam. Oh, so what do you know about her, and what will you be looking forward to in the year?
I'm yet to meet Aruna ji, but one thing I can say is when she's in concert, her presentation is beyond compare for me. She really manages to capture everyone in the audience, whether they understand music, whether they understand South Indian music. Whoever's in that audience, she has such stage presence and also apparently great wit. So I'm quite looking forward to meeting her, to be honest.
Oh, good, because as you know, we'll be travelling with her, so we can...
I'm looking forward to it.
We can expect lots of inspirational music and some jokes.
I hope so. I hope so too.
Harry, I know you started playing the veena when you were very young.
Yes. Arguably, yes. When I was 8, I think.
That's pretty young.
Yeah, that's young enough.
And you've had various teachers.
Yes, one predominant teacher in my life, but through her influence I've met many others.
But you had a very special musical encounter when you were still in your early teens.
It happened actually by accident. Ravi Shankar, Pandit Ravi Shankar, the sitar maestro, was actually asking all the staff from my school, the Bhavan Centre, to take part in a CD that he was doing, which was being produced by George Harrison. So my teacher, Shivashakti Sivanesan, she teaches both Veena and she teaches vocals. So obviously they needed a Veena player and a female vocalist, so she couldn't do both. So she just thought, okay, let's bring Harry along. The initial idea was to play Veena. However, when I got there, Raviji was in need of an extra male vocalist. So then he just said, oh, okay, put that down. And then he just started humming a few things. And he said, hum behind me. So I hummed behind him. And he said, oh, okay, then you can sing. So yeah, so at an early age, I think I was probably about 13, 12, 13, something like that. Yeah, I got to meet him and George at a very...
George Harrison.
Harrison, yes.
Well, we'll be hearing much more about the World Roots Academy 2011 across the next year, right here on World Roots. So do keep an eye on the World Music pages of the Radio 3 website for details of what Harry will be getting up to. But we're going to end today's programme with just a taste of what's to come over the next year. And so, Harry, you've been joined by a mridangam player. The mridangam is the double-headed drum from South India. So... would you introduce him to us?
Yes, his name is Prasanna Devaraja. He is a very close friend and we've known each other since we were probably knee-high and have played with each other since we were knee-high, so I'm really glad that he's here.
And what will you play to end the programme?
We are going to play out with a piece composed by the Saint Muthuswami Dikshitar. It's called Anandamrita Kaushini, which means she who showers the nectar of bliss. And it's set in Raga Amrita Varshini and Tala Adi, which is a cycle of 8 beats.
So we end World Roots today with this special recording in the studio by the new 2011 World Roots Academy protege, Harry Vrindavan Sivanesan, together with the mridangam player Prasanna Devaraja, and they're playing She Who Showers Nectar. Thank you.
Veena player Hari Vrindavan Sivanasan with Prasanda Devaraja on Mridangam, ending today's World Roots. As Lucy announced, Hari is the latest protege of the World Roots Academy. And as ever, full details of the World Roots Academy, as well as information on all the music you heard in today's programme, are available online through the World Music pages of the Radio 3 website. World Roots was presented by Lucy Duran and produced by Peter Meanwell. And next week, Lucy introduces performances by Finnish accordion virtuoso Maria Kalaniemi, the leading singer of the Reunion Islands Danielle Warreau, and Welsh band Maybon. That's at the same time, 3 p.m. here on BBC Radio 3, next Saturday afternoon.
As Mahler's anniversary year continues, BBC Radio 3 brings you a rare chance to hear Mahler's Beethoven. In performance on 3, members of the London Philharmonic will play the Eroica, as reorchestrated by Mahler for what he saw as modern halls and modern instruments. A rare chance to hear two great symphonists combine. Beethoven's Eroica, through the eyes and ears of Mahler. Performance on 3, Wednesday night at 7 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Just gone 4 o'clock this Saturday afternoon, and now on BBC Radio 3, Alan Shipton explores the recordings of a master of jazz trumpet in this week's Jazz Library.
The subject of today's Jazz Library is a trumpeter who, had he lived, would have been 80 years old today, Clifford Brown. And joining me to talk about Clifford's music is Tom Purchard. Tom, let's just try and place Clifford, because he had an extraordinarily short career. He died in a motor accident at the age of 25, and yet he seems to have stamped an indelible impression on the course of jazz trumpet playing in the 1950s. Why was it? What was so special about him?
I think the assurance and the achievement is so complete. He certainly fulfilled one of the great jazz narratives, one of the great parts of jazz mythology, with the early tragic death and the blazing, concentrated discography leading up to that. His technique, to begin with, is something which is admired by not just all trumpet players, but all musicians, totally assured from the beginning. But for me, it's his quicksilver imagination and the beauty and the fullness of his melodic imagination, which, although he uses the bebop vocabulary like any other musician of that period, he can seem to think and to execute at such speed and such velocity, such wonderfully melodic phrases which go beyond any of the kind of rote learning that sometimes affects bebop playing.
Now, you mentioned rote learning, and it's only 6 weeks ago here on Jazz Library that Guy Barker and I quoted Charles Mingus talking about Thad Jones, accusing, firstly, Fats Navarro of being very lazy and indolent, and accusing Clifford Brown of being a copyist. Now, obviously, as we said at the time, that was a slightly extreme point of view designed to promote the young Thad Jones. But there is a grain of truth in it. Certainly in the first record we're going to hear, which is the earliest recording we have of Clifford Brown from 1952, a man who's not entirely found his own voice yet.
Well, certainly Clifford Brown idolised Fats Navarro, and they met very early on, and Fats Navarro was very kind to Clifford and gave him a lot of encouragement going forwards in his burgeoning career. And certainly what we're going to hear now is a trumpet player very much in the shadow of Fats Navarro, also actually of Dizzy Gillespie and perhaps Clark Terry, but He does manage very early on in his career to go beyond the Fats Navarro influence and develop certain kinds of technical interests, but also that kind of melodic fluency that I was talking about, which seems to me to be a much more rounded kind of playing than Fats Navarro ever could accomplish, also dying in his mid-20s, of course.
So this is Chris Powell and his Blue Flames with a track called Ida Red from March 1952.
Ida Red, dressed in blue, I got a gal named Ida too. Early I leave, I come back late. If I make this loot, well, I'll be straight. I'm so glad, I'm about to shout. Well, I got my load, now I'm backing out. But if I be nice and kind, why can't you plumb the line? Play fair, I don't turn rat. I'll trade my board for a fishtail cat. I'll ride you round from town to town. But if you don't be good, gal, I'll let you down. If that ain't yours, leave it alone. It'll get you outdoors. Get up the road, I'm gone. Well, I'm telling you late. But I'm telling you straight, you can't catch no fish, you ain't got no bait.
Ida Red by Chris Powell and his Blue Flames, featuring the subject of today's Jazz Library, Clifford Brown on muted trumpet there, and the full personnel can be found on the Jazz Library website, the address to be given later in the programme. That's from an album on Columbia of early and late Clifford Brown called The Beginning and the End. It's also the first track on the 4CD proper box of Clifford Brown's work. We're going to move on, Tom, to a moment really where Clifford's own voice starts to emerge much more clearly than in that last piece, which is an album currently out as a memorial album on Blue Note, but in fact it was one of his earlier sessions for that label in 1953 with Lou Donaldson as a frontline partner and the wonderful prodding piano of Elmo Hope. Here I think you can see something of what you were talking about in terms of Clifford developing his individual voice, but this is also, in a sense, the Clifford that is easiest to parody. It's rhythmically very samey. He doesn't vary as he was to later in the time, the patterns in which he plays. And there's a kind of slightly staccato tucka-tucka-tucka-tucka-tucka feel about all the phrases. That was going to go, wasn't it? But the invention within those phrases is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. And I think you're right because, in a sense, Clifford Brown seems here to be constructing a kind of etude for himself in the way that John Coltrane does later with Giant Steps. He's setting himself a certain number of technical problems. Firstly, the piece that he's written is quite fast, but more importantly, it's got a lot of chords in it and a lot of unusual chords as well. He's taken the basic I Got Rhythm pattern and superimposed on it a chromatic chord progression that seems to kind of wrap itself around the tune in a very kind of boa constrictor-like way. These chords, moving chromatically, are difficult to play, especially at speed. And Clifford Brown seems to want to wring as much information as he can out of every single chord. Also, on top of that, he's working on his tonguing. He's tonguing an awful lot there. It's very difficult. He's doing it very fast. It does sound very staccato. In fact, Miles Davis criticised Clifford Brown for tonguing too much, and later on that's going to smooth out. But it does seem that he's setting himself these challenges and really working on them, and we can hear him get more out of this composition of his than Lou Donaldson does in his solo, for instance.
The composition's called Brownie Speaks by the Lou Donaldson Clifford Brown Quintet. Thank you. Brownie Speaks from the Memorial album on Blue Note, the Lou Donaldson Clifford Brown Quintet. That's Clifford Brown on trumpet with Lou Donaldson alto, Elmo Hope piano, Percy Heath bass and Philly Joe Jones drums, recorded in New York in June 1953. Tom, as I understand it, what happened in the second half of that year is that Clifford joined the Lionel Hampton Orchestra and zapped off to Europe. And in fact, there are quite a lot of recordings made in Europe during that time, mainly with the altoist Gigi Grice and contingents from that Hampton band. We've chosen to gloss over those to come back to New York, and I suspect the reason for that is that those are slightly uneven recordings, but what we get back in New York is really a stunning live example of Clifford.
That's right. I think Clifford Brown actually left the Lionel Hampton Orchestra under something of a cloud, having been making these strictly unauthorised recordings in Europe. And when he got back to New York, he began freelancing and working quite a lot with Art Blakey. What we're going to hear here is, in some ways, actually the beginning of the Jazz Messengers. You have the first Jazz Messengers rhythm section, nucleus of it, with Horace Silver on piano, jabbing away with his left hand, which combines so well with Blakey to produce this really bubbling, really active bass on which Clifford Brown just floats. We're also going to hear the sorts of things that the Jazz Messengers were set up to counteract, and indeed the Max Roach Clifford Brown Quintet. That is what was sometimes the sloppiness of freelance jazz presentation at that time, where scratch bands would get together and try to play things like Confirmations. We're going to hear very difficult bebop on the hoof. And as you hear, even Clifford Brown and Lou Donaldson have problems going through that first time. After the head's over, though, it's into a beautiful, fluent Clifford Brown solo.